members and guests in the audience. We're going to go ahead and start. We're still with the Rules Committee. Apparently, was meeting in this room, and it went a little long. I shudder to think what they were debating, but they were here longer. So we're going to get started now with our informational hearing on the Transportation Economic Development Bonding Proposal. That will require no voting action on our part, except for your attention and good discussion. So while the staff is continuing to set things up and plug computers in and so on, we'll go ahead and start with the informational hearing on House File 2185. That'll be the vehicle for this discussion in the transportation, otherwise known as the TED Fund. Representative Scalzi, are you going to be the key focus to kind of tee it up and talk about this? Is that great? Okay, then I know who I'm be speaking to. So, Representative Scalzi, I don't know that we have to move a bill to get this informational hearing in front of us because we're not going to take any action on anything today, but I know you do want to talk about the TED proposal and some things like that. So let me yield the floor to you, and you just tell us what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate that you got us on early because we waited the last committee hearing, so I'm very grateful for that.
No, you're welcome.
This House File 2185 is a new program. It's called Transportation Economic Development, and it's the acronym is TED, so we'll be referring to it as TED. And I just want to explain a little bit about why this is important to transportation infrastructure and give you a little bit of a background on an economic development proposal like this that was a great success and provided high-paying jobs in the last 4 years. In Minnesota, we have some great homegrown companies, a lot of Fortune 500 companies, more than any other state per capita. We know that. And they want to expand and create jobs, and we want to keep them happy and keep them here. In the past 4 years, we've worked for St. Jude Medical, who wanted to double the size of their company. They wanted to build a building, but they said to us, the transportation infrastructure has not kept up with our needs. And unless we can get this 75-year-old bridge that had holes in it replaced, we're going to be building probably elsewhere. And they're a worldwide company. They could build anywhere. They choose Minnesota. So we worked very hard through the last two bonding bills and in many other areas, Ramsey County, for instance, worked very hard. And we have that bridge replaced right now. And St. Jude Medical, and this is only 6 miles north of here, north of the Capitol. St. Jude Medical has built a nice, great big building, 600 employees, high-paying jobs, and they want to build more buildings. They are very thankful. I did not ask them to come today, but I'm just using them as an example of what can happen when the state keeps up its infrastructure demands for the companies that want to expand. Deed helped us with that. The bonding bill helped us with that. Ramsey County did. So we do have members of, we have representatives from Deed and MnDOT that will be explaining a little bit about the TED program. I just received recently, I'm going to back up a little bit or I'm going to jump forward. We also have a grouping of companies north of this new St. Jude Medical Rice Street 36 bridge. Another 4 miles north, there's a grouping of companies, and I just received a letter from Land O'Lakes today. They're begging us for help replacing the Rice Street Bridge over 694. Mm-hmm. There's a grouping of companies, about 12 of them there. The largest companies have about 5,000 employees. Land O'Lakes happens to be a Fortune 500 company. They want to expand. The congestion at this area is excessive. And so we're preventing people from Forest Lake, Wisconsin, wherever, from getting to the northwest Minneapolis suburbs. They just can't get there. And we have letters from MnDOT. So this is the type of situation that will fit into this TED program, in my estimation. And we have here with us Jim Tolis, who's the Public Works Director of Ramsey County, to explain a little bit about how congestion is impacting our businesses wanting to expand, and maybe a little bit about St. Jude Medical.
Mr. Tolis, welcome to the committee and for speaking in support of this bill. Would you identify yourself for the folks watching at home?
Jim Tolis. I'm the Director of Public Works and County Engineer for Ramsey County.
Good deal. You can proceed with your testimony.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here and share with you, I think, one success story and then talk about how it might relate to another. Trunk Highway 36 and Rice Street was a very congested, old interchange, deteriorating bridge structure, a lot of safety issues, and is a major constraint point along Highway 49. Rice Street is for those of you who do not know the history of it, was actually a state trunk highway. Came back on the county system north of 694 back in the late 1990s as part of a consolidation of jurisdiction effort. The portion from 694 all the way down to University Avenue came back in 2002. From the time that Ramsey County got it and worked with our area communities, it was identified that 694 and Highway 36 were the major constriction points along that trunk highway. Trunk Highway 49 plays a reliever role to 35E traffic. Businesses along there, as well as residents and other users, found great delays and, in fact, starts to delay traffic on the mainline carriers of 694 and 36. So several years ago, we were looking at an improvement on Trunk Highway 36, and when St. Jude's came into the picture, it became extremely clear that it was a critical link to major businesses and employers in the area. And with the help of St. Jude, and I might add, this is probably an outstanding example of cooperation and collaboration amongst all levels of government. Ramsey County may have taken the lead, but we had great assistance from St. Jude's. We had incredible support from MnDOT. Three communities, Little Canada, Roseville, and Maplewood, all worked very hard together. Metro Transit is now actually putting on a park and ride facility on the southeast quadrant of the interchange because now it works so much better. For a campus like St. Jude's, which is split between two major tracts of land, one on the north side and one on the south side of Highway 36, it prevented their employees and their customers from getting back and forth on a regular basis. And I believe their holdings are in excess of 80 acres, so they have additional space to do additional expansion. The one that Bev refers to as a world headquarters for the St. Jude's operation. Mm-hmm. We managed to put together funding sources from the state, federal, and local sources in order to bring this project to fruition. We did it in record time in terms of project development because of the large impetus behind it. We had unique and expansive support from all of the residential and commercial properties along the corridor. It isn't just St. Jude's that benefits from this, but all of the other commercial properties that are affected. And it was completed in two construction seasons, and in spite of the state shutdown, was done within budget and on time. And I think everybody that's driven that corridor finds it dramatically better on Rice Street as well as it is on Highway 36. This project, in fact, has been the recipient of two different awards for engineering excellence in the last couple of months. So it is a great success story. What Bev refers to on the north end is 694 and Rice Street. And for those familiar with how 35E and 694 come together in the common section, mm-hmm. this interchange was identified for replacement back in 2004. And MnDOT had made a commitment at that time to do that. And it was thought that they would do the unweave section first and help deliver cars through the 35 and 694 corridor more rapidly. As that project was delayed, this project was put off to 2008. Then it was referred to as being on the heels of the unweave completion. Subsequently moved out to 12 and then 14, 15. Now it's no longer in the 20-year plan. If for any of those that drive it, you come north and get through the 35 section pretty well on 694. The major pinch point is the Rice Street interchange. We go from five lanes to two, mm-hmm. puts it into gridlock, backs it all the way up to White Bear Avenue at different times. 694 is currently one of the most congested corridors in the region, in the metropolitan area, congested in excess of 5 hours a day in each direction. It is the constraint for those trying to get to those companies like Land O'Lakes, Boston Scientific, Guidant, Smith Medical. There are a number of very high-tech firms in that area, outstanding employers, delivering those vehicles through that constraint between Rice Street and Lexington. is a critical link in the northern suburbs. MnDOT has recently, and it was a downsized version of 694 improvements, has begun replacement of the structures and the interchange area between Lexington, Trunk Highway 10, and Snelling, yep, immediately west of Lexington.
We refer to it as Snake Pit Junction down here, but yes it's under construction, I think, as we speak.
Okay, it is. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to be left with is highway improvements east of Rice Street, highway improvements west of Lexington, and a major constraint at Rice Street, 694, mm-hmm, and the lanes between. So we have long identified an improvement for the interchange and a lane add for 694 in order to repair that.
Okay.
And I just want to make sure, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that we do have a map. We have letters of support from the companies in this area. We have letters of support from all of the cities in this area. I'm looking at the criteria for TED, and I'm thinking that we have to make sure that we have enough help for these Fortune 500 companies with large numbers of employees of high-paying jobs. So I'm going to pass this to the chair.
Representative Scalzi, is there just the one copy of the map? Because I see the pages handing out the letters now. So.
Right. I just have the one copy of the map.
Oh, thank you for making it available to us.
But what the Transportation Economic Development Program is developing criteria, and this bill is going to go to the Jobs Committee. And as it moves, we want to make sure that we have enough leeway in there for companies like Land O'Lakes to have some assurance that the state programs could affect them as well as other companies too. We've got extreme congestion there, and it's affecting everyone's business. It's affecting their expansion plans, and we want to make sure that we're taking care of our homegrown businesses that provide these high-paying jobs. But not only for those businesses. As you go west on 694, there's 90,000 traffic counts on that freeway. And when you wait 5 hours, there's 5 hours worth of congestion during the day. Mm-hmm. It's not getting anybody to anywhere. And so it's not only these companies that are affected. It's anyone in the metro area, in the northeast metro area, in the northwest as well. We're passing out the letter, just a sampling of the letters of support from the companies, and a sampling of a letter of support from the cities affected. And then at this time, we would like to turn it over to the people who would be working on the TED program, Matt Shands from MnDOT.
MnDOT, you say? Okay. Please come down. Mr. Tolis, thank you for your testimony. And I recognize a couple of MnDOT employees here. If you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, that'd be great.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Matt Shands from Minnesota Department of Transportation.
And my name is Jeremy LaCroix. I'm with the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Could you spell your last name for the record?
It's L-A capital C-R-O-I-X.
LaCroix, thank you. Okay. And you're with Deed, and Matt, you're with MnDOT.
Right. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Which one of you would like to go first? Jeremy, Mr. LaCroix, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here today to support Representative Scalzi's bill for the TED program. This will actually be the second year of the program, and it's been a great collaboration between MnDOT and Deed, as transportation is a vital ingredient for economic development, and it's just been a great collaboration between the agencies to make accessing these funds to help projects easier for local government and for making our agencies operate more efficiently. So with that, Matt's going to explain a little bit about the program.
Thank you, Mr. LaCroix. Mr. Shands, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think the page may have passed out kind of a one-pager handout.
No,
we have a
yet.
Couple of different handouts, but
just a sec. Ron, do you have a one-pager from MnDOT? Is that there, too?
Looks like. must have been in your, I don't know of another.
We put one in the packet. Give me just a moment here.
Mr. Chairman, it's...
Go ahead. Proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm just going to kind of quickly go over some background on the program, some of the program objectives, where we stand right now in terms of the funding for this upcoming solicitation that we're getting ready to issue, some of the selection criteria that Representative Scalzi referenced in her testimony, and then our program schedule. As Representative Scalzi and Mr. Tolis indicated, really the inspiration or the initiation of this program was from the 2009 interchange solicitation for the metro area in Greater Minnesota, and that's where the Rice Street project that they discussed, 36 and Rice Street project, was funded through that program. Following up on that, the department, working with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, determined that there was a real opportunity there for us to kind of combine our departmental technical experience and interests in developing a program whereby we would be identifying transportation infrastructure investments with the specific objective of supporting job creation or job retention while at the same time maintaining our transportation safety and mobility issues. So we developed this transportation economic development program. The legislature approved a pilot program back in for the 2010 where we did a solicitation. We received 35 applications totaling of total funds requested were $117 million. We had about $33 million that we were able to spend on those programs, and we wound up selecting 11 projects. I believe there's also a couple of pages in your handouts that identify those 11 projects. Ultimately, one project had to drop out. They just weren't quite as ready as they thought they were initially. So there was a project in Stuartville that we weren't ultimately able that they decided to wait on. So we're down to 10 projects. We used $33 million, which leveraged an additional $19 million in matching funds from local units of government and also some private sector contributions. The program objectives, I mean, I think people have a pretty good understanding of that. We really are focusing on job creation, job retention, both in the short term, and so we're talking about both the construction jobs, but more importantly, the long-term permanent jobs that will result from these types of projects. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we also look at is the opportunities for industrial aggregation, where we can take advantage of providing infrastructure that will encourage related industries and related businesses to locate adjacent to one another to more efficiently create economies of scale and those sorts of things. As Representative Scalzi mentioned, we are interested in making sure that we don't at least do anything to exacerbate existing congestion problems that we have or safety problems that we have. Our transportation system is predominant in terms of making sure that we don't exacerbate any existing issues there. We also are very interested in promoting and encouraging participation from the private sector, where we provide infrastructure that there is a direct benefit to the private sector business or the local government that may own that facility, that road or bridge facility. And then we also are very aware and cognizant of the need to provide some geographical balance in terms of where the selected projects are located. So we select projects in both the urban area and rural areas. Right now, for the solicitation that we're getting ready to issue, we have $20 million in trunk highway funds that has already been appropriated to MnDOT. It's there. It's ready to use for this TED program. We are waiting, and that's part of that. That's in effect the bill that Representative Scalzi has before you recommends, or would provide an additional $10 million in deed general obligation bond funds, and so that those funds are still pending. We can't count on those for sure until we get the legislative appropriation approved. So right now we're kind of in a little bit of limbo in terms of how much money we'll have available, but we're going to move forward with the solicitation and just make that point clear to people. The selection criteria that we have are based on four factors. The statewide economic benefit, and again that focuses primarily on jobs created, jobs retained. The transportation impact, we want to make sure that any project that is proposed is consistent with any regional or local or state plans that are out there. A financial plan, what we are trying to do with this program is encourage people to propose where the dollars that are provided through TED are the last dollars needed in order to complete a project and bring a project to letting and construction. And then project readiness. You know, all else being equal, we prefer to see projects selected that are closer to being ready. So, we look to see projects that are ready for letting and delivery within a, say, 1-3 year time frame. Finally, our schedule as it stands right now, and I have to apologize, since this was prepared for Monday's presentation, we've rethought our schedule a little bit, and we're going to allow a little bit more time for the applications to come in. So it's no longer April 15th. We're going to ask for applications on April 22nd, I think, and then the applications will be due May 12th. So we're gearing up for another solicitation here, and we hope to have that out. Our target date was today. It may have to wait till tomorrow before we send out the notice to everybody. So
good. Thank you. Mr. Chans, I was aware of when we created the TED Fund here a few years ago. I think that was, we dropped $30 million in that, I think, the first time around.
Yeah.
And we split it equally. Mr. Chans?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's kind of complicated the way it worked last time. Part of the, if you'll recall, Mr. Chair and members, we had the TED program, and then we also had something we called the SAM program, the Safety and Mobility Program.
Yes.
Between those two programs, there was $70 million that was dedicated by the legislature, and that had to be split 50 Metro, 50 in Greater Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So between the two programs, there had to be a 50-50 split. As it turned out, we were able to work it out so that both the TED program and the SAM program saw equal money being spent in each of those two regions.
Was Elk Run down on 52 part of one of those programs, do you recall?
I don't believe so.
I just remember that one was one where we thought we were going to have some property developed, and we did a thing with Pine Island and so
right.
on and so forth. And unrelated to this request.
Yeah, that Mr. LaCroix reminds me, Mr. Chairman, that that was done before TED and SAM as well. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Further comments or anything like that? And then we're going to go to questions from members. Representative Morrow, I think you had your hand up there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you had the right evolution. We did talk about Elk Run first. Then we created SAM, or the precursors of SAM and TED.
There we go.
Just a couple questions then as the
Please,
vision here.
Representative
Morrow. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just want to confirm, I'm looking at the front sheet of the packet you sent. It says funding, number item 3, 2012 TED program request, $20 million trunk highway. Is that a request, or is that money already secured and ready to go?
Mr. Chans?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, yes. That $20 million in MnDOT trunk highway money is ready to go. The $10 million of deed is not yet.
Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chans. I want to follow up on the $20 million. We talked about doing $30 million in the previous iteration of the lead up to TED. Does MnDOT have bonding capacity between project or bonding authority that MnDOT's been given and the bonding proceeds that have been needed for projects? You know, we've heard in prior years about the gap between the amount that's been authorized or appropriated and the amount that's been needed. Is there still a gap?
Mr. Shands?
I'll try to answer that question, Mr. Chairman. Representative Moore, the first thing to understand about the $20 million that's identified here is that it's not trunk highway bonds. This is trunk highway cash, so that means that it's not an issue in terms of bumping up against our debt limit. But to get to your question, my understanding is that that's still very much an issue, that our debt, we have to constantly think about our debt capacity, and we're up against that pretty tight.
This does count against the debt ratio that your CFO came and talked to us about here. I think that's what you're saying.
Well, but this, yes. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, this would not, because this is trunk highway cash as opposed to trunk highway bonding authority.
The bonding would, however. Representative Moore,
and Mr. Chair, can I follow up just on that one? Yes. Because I think when we did the $30 million, we did it as trunk highway bonds. Can you just explain to the committee the difference between doing it in trunk highway bonds and trunk highway cash as we move forward with this proposal?
Mr. Sands, yeah, that would be very enlightening to the committee to make sure we're clear on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Well, trunk highway bonds are bonds that are issued they would be issued sometime within the next 4 years, where the Minnesota Management and Budget issues bonds. We use the proceeds of those bond sales and then pay back those bonds with our ordinary debt service payments over a 20-year time frame, I think is what we're looking at there. Whereas trunk highway cash is cash that comes into the trunk highway fund from the gas tax, the registration fees, the motor vehicle sales tax.
Representative Morrow, follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I won't belabor the point. My question is, there seems to be, maybe not a backlog, but there were 23 projects, I think, in the last iteration that weren't funded. I think they're on the back page of your handout. So I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Chance could just help me out. It seems like there's a lot of demand out there for this type of transportation economic development. And I'm trying to figure out, are we being too small in doing $10 million in general obligation and $20 million in trunk highway cash? Are there ways in which we could expand this program, either by doing trunk highway bonding or the like? Because I have to imagine this list is going to get longer as the next iteration comes out.
Mr. Shands?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Morrow, no, I have no doubt that this list will get longer. I would be surprised if nearly every one of these doesn't reapply. And I, you know, over the course of the last year, as Mr. LaCroix and I and others have been administering this, we get contacted on a regular basis from folks wanting to know, you know, what's coming down the pipe here and what can we do. And we're always more than happy to give folks our advice in terms of what types of projects we're looking for. So, the demand will certainly outstrip what's available this time around.
As I recall, representatives and Mr. Mr. Chans, when we did this, one of the things we wanted to stay away from was place naming. The MnDOT engineers very specifically develop a program of work based on a matrix of things that help projects qualify for their need, whether they're worn out, whether the area's been growing, and so on and so forth. But that the TED program was specifically to come outside of that set of criteria for unusual circumstances like St. Jude, saying, hey, I know, you know, this intersection's probably somewhere in the 20-year plan, but we need to build a new headquarters now, and we need 600 employees by the third quarter of 2013, not 2023. And so it gave MnDOT a way to come outside of the regular queue and move a project up. It I think that was kind of what we were thinking of whenever we started the TED program, and why we included DEED in the discussions too. Otherwise, we'd sit around here and discuss all day about who had the better economic climate or need, and that wasn't really one of the criteria that traditional highway engineers use as they kind of rank projects and so on and so forth. So this was kind of another avenue for projects that popped up that had a specific economic impact, positive economic impact in the area. Representative Morrow, if you want to correct my memory on that or add to it, please do.
I just want to complete my thought, if I might, Mr.
Certainly,
Chair.
Yes.
And I think it's more of a comment. First, I think you're correct, at least in my understanding, as you and I both worked on these projects, on these bills throughout the years. But we've soon learned that many projects seem to even meet that immediacy requirement. Mr. Chair, my comment would be I would invite I would be happy to work with you. There's more economic development demand than we're going to be able to meet with the proposal on the table before us. And I'd be happy to work with you and with MnDOT to see if we might even be able to expand what we could do between DEED and MnDOT, because this list of 23 is going to grow, and if we're really worried about jobs, we should be expanding what we're doing in a project like this.
Well, it seems to this legislator that at least this small step in that direction was kind of to prove the concept that we could come outside the queue without all of us getting crossways with each other, and we actually could have agencies make this work so that good things were happening. Representative Hausman's been very patient while we've been having this discussion. So, Representative Hausman, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just give a slightly different perspective, because I think we're assuming that dollar amount is going to totally fund a project. And I'll just use the two projects that Representative Scalzi gave as an example. In some of these complex urban spots, there are going to be parts of it. I mean, you have a problem, and some of it might be solved with federal funding, some of it state, and some of it local. But until you sort of have designed a solution, you don't even know what are the pots of money that are appropriate. There are going to be some local roads involved in it, etc. So, as I understand it, on the Rice Street project, for example, state bonding was a small portion of what eventually was also federal funding, state funding, local funding that completed the project. So when you're giving that as an example, or when you're defining the new problem, this fund isn't going to construct that that whole solution. It is perhaps going to be some of the early money to design a solution. Would that be fair to say?
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hausman is exactly right. Mm-hmm. And the project at 694 in Rice, which was not scheduled on MnDOT's schedule, and it was a bipartisan effort, as is the one coming up on 694 with Representative Runbeck and me. This was very difficult because early on we were told that, well, you can't use trunk highway bonds on this, you can only use it for the bridge deck. Well, out of a $20 million project, the bridge deck was like $5 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Governor Pawlenty stepped up to the plate, as did Commissioner McElroy, and we all worked very cooperatively together with MnDOT. Ramsey County was the one who located the spots. Jim Tolis, Director Tolis is here, and he may be able to tell you what those different pots of money are, but it's very difficult, and it was beyond my capability, but he was the one who knew where all these pots of money were. And, you know, there was some turnback money, there was some congestion mitigation money, there was some Met Council money, very complex funding arrangement. And if you want to know some of that, he's here.
So, Mr. Chair, I raise that just if people think that what we're putting here in this bill is somehow going to do a project like that, it's never going to happen.
I think this was intended to be a catalyst to get things started.
Right.
Yes.
So I thought it was just helpful to get that perspective because there are lots of different size projects, but if you ever thought that was going to be fully funded, everybody else in the state would say, well, we're never getting any. Mm-hmm. So it's just important, I think, to understand the tiny little piece of that project that this would do.
I think Mr. Shand's on the handout that we got on about the page 4, there is a breakout of the monies that were leveraged or that were instigated by the TED grant process. Mr. Shands.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to point that out as
okay,
well.
Okay, thanks.
The other thing that I want all members to understand here, and the reason we are big supporters of Representative Scalzi's bill is, as speaking on MnDOT's behalf now, is that there are some pretty serious restrictions in terms of what we can spend trunk highway money on and what we can spend GO bonding authority on. And to the extent that we're limited to spending trunk highway money only on the trunk highway system, that renders any local project ineligible for trunk highway bonds, or trunk highway funding, rather. So that's why it's nice to have a mixture of resources so that we can kind of mix and match and be able to take advantage of proposals that are brought forward to us by local units of government, for example, and be able to use the bonding money that DEED puts forth. In a perfect world, it would be nice to have a funding source for this program that had no restrictions at all, but we're not quite there yet.
Well, thank you.
If I can just add one thing.
Certainly, Mr. Chance.
We do like to, you know, we do hope that we do get projects in which the TED award or the TED money that's provided to that project is enough to actually complete a project such that there will be jobs created or jobs retained as a result of that project. So we're really kind of focusing on those kinds of applications, those kinds of proposals.
This bill is actually in the possession of the Jobs Committee. We wanted to tee this up for discussion here today because, members, next Wednesday we're planning on hearing some of these bonding requests. But I remember the work we've done in years past on getting the TED fund set up, and it's important that the members understand how the different pots of money have restrictions but how they can create opportunities for different things to come together to actually make a project happen. Representative Scalzi, did you have a concluding remark?
I just want to thank the committee for taking the time. We mm-hmm. really appreciate the time, and I know that you're very aware of transportation issues, and I just thank you for that. I do have, and I shared this with MnDOT, we do have to talk about pent-up demand. Mm-hmm. We've got the letter from 1999 that said this bridge that Representative Runbeck and I are working on would be let in 2004. And I have the letter, and I keep showing it to MnDOT, and we're just going to continue to work on this. But there is pent-up demand that has not been satisfied.
Before you leave, I see Representative Hornstein was also on the list. I'm sorry, Representative Hornstein. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, she can leave. I just want to have more of a procedural question about bonding for you.
Since all right. Well, reason. You don't have to listen to this discussion then. Representative Scalzi, Mr. Chance, and Mr. LaCoy, thank you for coming down today. Look forward to having you back in front of the committee at some time in the future. Appreciate your testimony. Members, now we already called to order because when I tapped the gavel, we did have a quorum. But we're going to go back to item number one on the agenda, which is the call to order, the roll call. The clerk has noted the roll already. And the approval of the minutes. If somebody would like to move the minutes, we'll discuss approving them. Well, let's see. Representative Shemansky, I saw him first. Representative Shemansky moves the minutes. Further discussion to them, corrections, additions, edits. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Thank you, members. We've had point number four, the discussion. We're going to come back to procedural stuff on bonding and so on towards the end of the meeting.
Wonderful.
So we're going to talk a little bit about a roadmap going forward. But before I do, as Representative Scott is coming with the House File 1835, I want to point out that we have some guests in the audience. To my left, from the Red River Valley Emerging Leadership Program, is there a member at the table that would like to take credit for having them here? Is that you, Representative Eakin? Do
sure,
you want to brag about them?
Sure,
go right
thank
ahead.
You, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'll take credit.
Good deal.
We've got some wonderful leaders here from the Red River Valley mm-hmm. who are attending today. So.
Good. Well, we'll welcome them. Thanks for coming. And good deal. Well, Representative Scott, there you are. House File 1835. Would a member like to move House File 1835? But before you do, let me find out where we're sending it. It's going to go over to Public Safety. They want to take a whack at it. So, member?
I'll move that bill.
Representative Leidiger, you're going to move this one.
House File
1835
for approval and over to Public Safety.
Okay, we have the bill in front of us, Representative Scott. Good to see you here.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing this bill. During the interim, I had the pleasure of bumping into my local sheriff here and just asking if there was anything that we could do on the legislative level that would make their lives easier and would help in their budget. And he brought up to me, yeah, there actually is something that could be done that would be a very simple move. and that is just to broaden the number of color options that the squad cars and all the different sheriff's vehicles could be painted. You should have some information in your packet about a number of different sheriff's departments that have also gotten on board with this idea. And with that, I'd just like to introduce my county sheriff, Sheriff James Stewart, and he will kind of give you some more details.
Sheriff Stewart, welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself for the folks at home. I understand, members, we are on a webcast of some sort today, so I hope you all straighten your ties and are looking your best. But Sheriff Stewart, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is James Stewart, and I'm the Anoka County Sheriff. And as Representative Scott said, we did have an opportunity to discuss some areas for improvement within our office. We've been trying to, like everyone across the state, trying to identify ways to improve our own efficiencies as well as our own accountabilities. And this is one of the areas that we did identify. Our overall desire is that we're asking for your support to enact the legislation to provide a little more flexibility as it relates to sheriff's mark squad vehicles, specifically the color of the vehicles. It became a focus for the sheriffs due to the challenges that were created by the limited manufacturer availability of certain colors, and specifically the mandated colors, and the unnecessary expense to paint our fleet vehicles. Our current law options, 16998, specifically defines the rules related to police, patrol, and security guard vehicles. And as you read through that, it would call out specifically that we shall have uniform colors and markings. Sub 1 says that municipal police departments, including the University of Minnesota Police Department and the Park Police Units, shall be predominantly blue, brown, green, black, or white. And Subdivision 3 calls out that the Sheriff's Office shall be predominantly brown or white. As you're likely aware, the Sheriff's role is that of an elected position and does represent the constituents of our county. And collectively, like you, we do represent all the citizens of the state. And this is a responsibility that I assure you, we do take very seriously. This request is based on our desire to remain as fiscally responsible as possible and to remain trusted as stewards of what the public has entrusted to us. The sheriff's roles, although they overlap in many ways with our PD counterparts, do offer a more diverse scope of the things that we're responsible for, including transport units, enforcement on waterways, as well as many other potential specialty units that vary from county to county, to include search and rescue, SWAT teams, recreational units, emergency management, and the like. You get the idea. Our roles require many specialty units, or as we call them in my office, the pulling units, the trucks, the SUVs, those type of vehicles, as well as vans for transport, in addition to the typical fleet of sedans that we would incorporate. Well, the challenges that we're encountering during this are that the fleet manufacturers do not take into consideration our current mandates or the current law when they are developing their color options. And all of the major vehicle manufacturers consistently fail to provide the mandated colors. Only Ford has offered brown consistently, and that's only been on their sedans. None of the manufacturers have offered brown consistently on any of our pulling units, as we call it, or the specialty units. So this, in turn, forces the sheriff's office to fall into a few different categories around the state. They can buy only Ford sedans if they desire to have brown vehicles, or they can run inconsistent colors in their fleet, which marginalizes our professional appearance, and it also kind of forces us to disregard the uniform color requirement within statute. It also, another option is that we would incur additional expenses annually to paint any vehicles into one of the mandated colors, or to operate only white squads, contrary to tactile and often community desires, in order to possess a uniform fleet without incurring those additional costs that I made reference to. So there's also a last category, which we're seeing has occurred, which we're trying to ensure doesn't continue, or that we would help close that gap, but there's also those that would utilize colors that are not consistent with the current mandates. I'm going to use the Anoka County example because obviously it's close to home and it's something I can relate to specifically for you. But since 2009, the Anoka County Sheriff's Office has paid approximately $11,750 to have our vehicles painted brown. The average cost to repaint a vehicle is $2,400. We have repainted three vehicles in that time frame. Three Chevy Tahoes, one Chevy Suburban, and one Ford F-350 during the past 3 years. And on an annual basis, we typically purchase three vehicles outside of the sedans that are not the Ford Interceptors, which includes transport vans and two SUVs, with an average annual cost to repaint those vehicles at $7,200. We've also found that at times, depending on what the vehicle is going to be used for, we just don't paint them, and we maintain whatever color they come in, and sometimes we run them as unmarked vehicles. Well, it's kind of a catch-22, because when we don't paint them to make them a marked vehicle, then we pay additional dollars on the taxes for licensing them as an unmarked vehicle versus a marked vehicle, and it also doesn't provide us as effective public visibility and certainly the professional presence within our communities. So as we have worked within the office to continue to identify ways to become more transparent, more accountable, and more responsible with what we have within our organization, this was one of the things that we identified as something we could certainly improve on. A little snapshot on the kind of the manufacturer reality. In 2012, there are five police packages available to law enforcement on the market. They are the Chevy Impala, Chevy Caprice, Chevy Tahoe, Dodge Charger, and the Ford Interceptor. All vehicles are offered in white and black, but only the Ford Interceptor has a brown color to choose from. Additionally, there are no specialty vehicles, such as the SUVs I had mentioned, the transport vans or trucks that come in brown on the current 2012 state contract. And this is consistent with previous year's contracts. They all do, however, come standard in white or black. And every pulling unit or specialty vehicle needed for the state sheriffs will need to be painted brown in order to become compliant with the mandates and maintain our uniformity if we are going to be utilizing brown vehicles. Recently, we conducted a very informal survey, reached out to 15 other counties around the state, and trying to identify what are the others doing, what are the other sheriffs in the other counties doing, and also to verify that we're not alone in this challenge, and it is what we found. We interviewed, we spoke with Brown County, Carlton County, Chisago County, Dakota, Douglas, Faribault, Kandiyohi, Lake, Nobles, Homestead, Ramsey, Stevens, Waseca, Washington, and Wright counties. And our findings were no real surprise. 10 of the 15 agencies are currently purchasing white vehicles in an effort to keep their fleet uniformed and to minimize the cost. Most of the vehicle manufacturers do not offer brown as an option on the state, as I had indicated. And that was their primary reason for selecting the white.
Sheriff Stewart, are black and gold, though, on the list? We've got to wrap this one up because it's probably going to get a unanimous vote here in a minute. But, so help us get to that here quickly.
We found 3 of the 15 are mixing their colors.
All right.
Which, again, impacts the professionalism and the uniform standards. And then I'll cut ahead here and be as quick as I can, sir.
Thank you.
All agencies surveyed did express more options. And ultimately, we do not desire to have brown eliminated. So we're asking for the black and gold to be added as color options for the marked squads because of the sheriff limitations, or excuse me, because of the manufacturer limitations, and recognizing that we are trying to be more fiscally responsible and trying to meet the mandates as well.
And we applaud you for that. Representative Scott, do you have anyone else who would like to speak to the bill? Anyone else in the audience to speak for or against or to this issue? Members, questions for the sheriff or for Representative Scott about this? Thank you for looking out for the Sheriff's Association, Representative Scott, and I'm sure that you'll have a fun trip to public safety where they want to discuss it too. So with that, Representative Leidiger renews his motion that House File 1835 be recommended to pass, re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Members, all in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, members. Representative Scott, nice work. You're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Chairman Stewart, thank you for enlightening us on the things we require you to do when you buy cars.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump ahead on the agenda, members, and ask Representative Nornes to come up. He has some guests from out of town, too, and let's have Representative Nornes have House File 18, House File 2008. Members, does somebody want to move House File 2008, Representative Morrow?
It is going to go to...
Public safety.
I'll move House File 2008 and recommend a move to public safety.
Thank you. Representative Nornes, the bill is before us. Welcome to the Committee on Transportation Policy.
Pleased to be here. Thank you very much. In your packet, I believe there are two letters in support of this legislation. I also have one more letter, if the chair would allow me to have it passed out.
Yes, if you'll hand that to Ron, he'll bring that up here and we'll have a look at it.
Just a side note, it has nothing to do with the bill, but my father was a mail carrier, and I think he was the only mailman that had a Ford with an interceptor engine in it. So he really got the mail delivered on time.
In a hurry.
House File 2008, it comes to us as a result of a couple of years of work and discussion, primarily from the Otter Tail County Safe Communities Coalition, which is a group of individuals that's their goal is public safety. And I met with this group last fall, and as a result of that, we have legislation which would authorize creating a certification for road guards. And for those of you who don't know what a road guard is, when there is a motorcycle ride, there are needs to have someone posted at intersections, places where traffic might be a hazard, and the road guards, the responsibility is to make sure that everyone is safe. Right now, there is no certification available for that. So if there are road guards, they're volunteers, and technically probably not. They're probably stretching their authority just a little bit because there is none. The rest of the road guards are officially from the sheriff's office or police department of someone who does have that authority. So that's basically where we're at here. I would like to call one witness to the table.
Yeah, and who is that to be?
That would be Backlund.
Mr. Backlund?
There may be some others, too, that want to testify.
Please.
But
Mr. Backlund, welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name clearly for the record, for those listening at home in particular, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Mac Backlund. I'm the state coordinator for American Bikers for Awareness, Training, and Education. We go by the acronym ABATE of Minnesota, and we are the largest motorcycling advocacy group in the state of Minnesota. ABATE of Minnesota fully supports House File 2008. We support allowing trained volunteers to improve the safety at intersections during these motorcycle runs. Many nonprofit and charity groups rely on the funds that motorcyclists raise during the events, and over the years it's totaled in the millions of dollars that go to wonderful causes. And the problem is that when these runs go through the intersection, sometimes it only takes 5 or 10 minutes. And to improve the safety of the intersection, people want to hold the traffic up to allow the group to ride through without any confusion and interruption. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that currently violates state law. So we would greatly appreciate having the ability to have our trained volunteers to hold traffic at intersections similar to the wide load and extended load escorts that the truck drivers use. And many times we ask for law enforcement to help us with that, and they're very helpful at times. We work greatly as partners with law enforcement community. But sometimes other public safety events come up in the district and that take priority, and they can't be at the intersection when that group is going through. So not only that, but it can also be quite expensive to have a couple squad cars there for only a short period of time. It's ABATE of Minnesota's belief that House File 2008 will improve the safety of our roads while keeping our trained road guards from being cited during these events. Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing the bill, and I urge all the members to vote yes on House File 2008.
Thank you, Mr. Backlund. Members, Representative Gauthier, you had a question, I believe, comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Narnes, is there anything in your bill that would require the charities or whoever are holding the event to notify the municipality that it's going to be happening and that you planned on using road guards?
Representative Narnes?
I don't think the bill specifies that, but that's the way it's done now. They're notified when there's a ride, so that most of the time they're involved directly besides. But it's not mentioned, but it's just basically understood that that would be done.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gotcha.
Just a comment. I just want to go on record that the Duluth Police Department is against this bill, and because the chief sees it as providing for more problems in traffic in a city that receives 3 million tourists a year. So I just want that on the record.
Thank you for your comments. Further questions or comments? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few years ago, I was approached by somebody who had been in a funeral procession and had been in an accident. I think there may have even been injury. Mm-hmm. And I can recall carrying a bill that just ended up educating and surprising me a lot about how difficult it was going to be to provide a different kind of regulation or protection for funeral processions. And I'm wondering, would we now go the extra mile for motorcycle group rides in a way that we don't for funeral processions? That's probably not for the two gentlemen at the table, but I don't know if there's anybody from a department that could help me with this.
I'm going to ask for further testimony in just a moment, but so if you'd hold that question, that's a good one for us to contemplate. Further questions or comments for this witness?
If I could respond to the question.
Representative Nornes.
The comment from Duluth. You know, this comes about in rural Minnesota where I live. These rides occur every week.
Thank you.
And it's pretty much rural countries. It's not a high traffic area like Duluth, and I can understand that. But I don't envision rides going through Duluth in the near future. Maybe that's wrong, but I don't envision rides to the least the level that we experience where I come from.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Gauthier.
We just a couple years ago hosted the Hells Angels convention, so we had a lot of motorcycles.
You can keep that one.
I'm trying to imagine the Hells Angels being licensed as crossing guards.
Yeah, that's bad.
Thank you, Mr. Backlund, for your testimony. There's no more questions for you, but I do have a Dave Pecchia, is it, from the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, would like to comment on this idea as well. Is it Pecchia? Am I saying it correctly?
Dave Pecchia.
Pecchia.
Thank you.
Oh, that's not two C's, it's two E's. Thank you. I'm sorry, I was reading the writing wrong here. If you would identify yourself and proceed with your testimony, that would be good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Pecchia, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. And I've heard from our members who are opposing this bill, specifically the cities of the first class, communities in the metropolitan area, and communities throughout the state that are vacation land destinations during the height of the motorcycling season. They feel that they have a better idea of the traffic patterns within their community, and through paid and trained either employees or volunteers, they have been able to successfully move these rides through their communities with little or no hazards. We do share the common goal of safely and expeditiously moving these groups through our communities in a safe manner. And we recommend a solution that would offer communities an option to opt out in the event that they would be able to not be required, as the statute requires that they allow motorcycle guards to provide traffic. In the metropolitan area, it's much different when you have multiple lanes with a very high volume of traffic versus the rural communities where there may be a four-way stop and more visibility and not quite the volume of traffic. So we have worked, we have been in discussions with the motorcycle groups, and we talked to Senator Hoffman on the Senate side, and we're in discussions on how we could perhaps come to a solution on our disagreements on this bill.
Representative Nornes, where is the bill in the Senate at the moment, do you know?
It passed.
Are you aware?
Yesterday.
From the committee.
I assume it went to public safety there as well.
So it's making its way through the process as well.
So any changes that need to be made would be between now and then.
Understood. I'm sorry if I cut you off, Mr. Pecchia. That's your comments? Representative Nornes, I'm sorry.
I was just going to respond that
certainly,
you know, this doesn't replace the current system where we have law enforcement directing traffic and so forth. And I don't envision in the metro area where road guards would even be used, where the high traffic areas. I think that, you know, the organization that's sponsoring the ride is going to have to make some decisions on that. And so I see these volunteers as where they're needed. They're going to be there and trained correctly. But I don't see them replacing the current system of using law enforcement, especially where you have a large population. That would be very risky, I think, on the part of whichever organization is organizing the riot.
Mr. Picha, I don't want to plow real deep on this aspect at the moment because this is probably a public safety question, but in my county and in my city, we have like a cadet corps or part-time folks who step up and help for special events. They actually wear a uniform. They're part of the police department. Are you familiar with this? Is there anything there that this group might be able to work with?
Correct. Mr. Chair, my experience as a police chief for over 16 and a half years in the city of Lionel Lakes, we had a volunteer corps of 128 community members. Many of those were uniformed either reserves or
reserves.
Police explorers. Okay. And the police reserves have received training in traffic direction. And typically when we would have a major event, that's the resource that we would rely on to provide the safety and for the motorcycle riders at very low cost to the event and to the community.
Just a thought to be contemplated as this bill moves forward. Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add, as we were talking about developing this concept, I just need to tell the members of the committee that those that were involved with the focus group and the planning meetings involved motorcycle enthusiasts, as you'd expect, staff from the community organizations who were concerned about the traffic safety aspect, and 12 law enforcement agents from 7 separate law enforcement agencies. So we do have law enforcement, perhaps not all, but some of them on board, and that's where this is from.
Members, are there further questions for Mr. Picha? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nornes. And twice I heard you say that you're envisioning this in the not in the metro area, and that you didn't see these type of rides going on in the metro area. When I guess I want to point out that many of my friends who ride motorcycles and they have these rides and they set these events up and go a lot of time fundraising events, and a lot of them are in the metro area. And so putting a law that's statewide blanket, I think I agree with Mr. Picha that maybe we want to do something as we go along to exempt out the metro area. I guess the idea of having people trained in traffic control and helping out is a good goal, and I think is a good thing. We all want to see safer roads, but it's just to assume that it's not happening in the metro area, I think, is a misnomer, and I think we need to make sure that we take care of that and those traffic situations also.
Representative Nornes,
I may have misspoke. I just think of our country as being very scenic and lakes and trees and the Twin Cities. As a ride, it didn't seem quite as attractive, but that's not to slight the Twin Cities.
Your pardon.
It's just a different landscape.
Well, Representative Nornes, I'm not going to let anybody follow you down that road you just took, so we'll leave it at that.
And Mr. Chair, it's just some of these events start here and go elsewhere or end here, and so, I mean, that's why I'm saying it's a lot of my friends that ride motorcycles understand this and are participating in these all the time. So
I understand. And
Representative Nornes,
it is a growing activity. Yes. Motorcycle riders, the license, the ownership, and the rides are growing each year, so we need to address the
You've heard some good discussion here at the moment. Is there anyone else that wants to, or furthermore, any further questions or comments for Mr. Picha before we turn him loose? Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify about this bill? Ms. McCormick, I see Ms. McCormick is coming. Thank you, Mr. Picha.
Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, maybe we can put some advertising dollars in and have the motorcycle rides come out to Carver County and Scott County. I think that's where we really want them.
We'd be glad to have them. Yes, we would. Representative Leidiger. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Pat McCormick, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. And we had previously met with Representative Nornes and talked about the fact that we do have a fiscal impact with this bill because rulemaking would be required. Driver and Vehicle Services is the regulatory authority for this for these rules that would be necessary so that we would provide oversight on program approval, on the curriculum, any liability issues that might be needed to be addressed, specific equipment, and also issues related to impairment because there would need to be enforcing not a drop. So those would be some of the things that would need to be addressed in rules. And we're not talking about absorbing staff costs for the rulemaking, but with rulemaking, we look at what the costs would be associated with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and it's considered to be what is described as a medium rule in their manual, and the costs are approximately $20,000. And so that would be a cost for implementation of this program.
Thank you for your comments to the fiscal note. Representative Nornes, when you parsed the fiscal note, was there any provision in there that you saw for the revenue that's authorized in line 3.4 of your bill?
The only thing that we've talked about, there is a motorcycle fund that's the result of, I believe you pay that when you have your motorcycle endorsement, am I correct?
Well, the guards themselves to get the certification. It says this commissioner can levy a fee to recover that charge for people who are certified should this bill become law.
I don't think that's intended, however, to cover that $28,000, is it?
Ms. McCormick, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the fund is overseen by the Office of Traffic Safety, and so we do have Donna Berger here, and she could address any questions related to that if you want, but that's what the fee is supposed to pay for, the costs involving the training itself and the costs associated with that training.
But not with the rulemaking?
Correct.
Representative Nornes, can we include a mechanism for recovering the rulemaking in that as well?
I think that's what we'll investigate between now and public safety to determine if that's possible.
I'd appreciate that. This committee would appreciate that. Further questions or comments for Ms. McCormick? Representative Gauthier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not for Ms. McCormick. It's for Representative Nornes. I'm hoping that you will take a look at perhaps opt-out option or the exemption of the cities of the first class in the metro area in your bill, because I would like to be supportive to it.
Right. I think that's a reasonable request, and we'll take that under advisement.
Representative Hausman.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't know who in the audience could answer this, but we're saying a person can stop and hold traffic for a motorcycle group ride. Are we accommodating something here that we haven't been willing to do for funeral processions?
Who would like to speak to that from the audience? Mr. Urquhart or Major Urquhart? Sure. Welcome to the committee. If you'd refresh my memory on your office, I would appreciate that. Your rank, it's major, right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Oh, good.
Ken,
yes.
Urquhart with the State Patrol.
Thank you.
To answer your question, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman. Presently, the folks that ride motorcycles that conduct those funeral escorts are authorized by statute to direct traffic, basically. But they have no training requirements or no equipment requirements. So they have that specific authority in law to direct traffic. So this group has come forward, and of course, our concern in the proposal was that if this is going to happen, these people are properly trained, properly equipped, and there's some significant liability protection. And then we don't want folks that are socially drinking to do traffic direction or anything like that. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. And that's a good question, because I've been approached several times in the off season by escort-type people that do funeral escorts. Major Urquhart, is there a rulemaking going on right now concerning them? I believe there is, that affects the whole traffic escort industry. I want to be clear, it's traffic escorts we're dealing with, just not the regular run-of-the-mill escorts here.
Mr. Chairman, the Associated General Contractors industry formed a steering committee to look at conducting a training and certification program to conduct escorts on these wide and long loads. And we were part of that along with the Department of Transportation. And subsequently, they brought some legislation forth to give them flagging authority to direct traffic. And subsequently, we've been involved in a rulemaking, as required by statute, to develop the training and the equipment requirements for those pilot car escorts, is how they were defined.
Yes, okay.
And we're working through that presently.
Thank you. I just thought the committee should know that there, this is an ongoing issue, and that using the rulemaking authority, public safety and the patrol is working on that issue now. This would come outside of that, though, but still a be cognizant of the, your request for actual training and liability and no drinking and things like that. There would be rules promulgated should this bill move forward. So that's helpful. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to testify regarding this issue? Seeing none, Representative Nornes, you're going to make a few concluding remarks. I think we're going to send you to public safety, and you can work on a few things on your way to there.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I don't have anything more to add other than that we're hoping that in the end we'll have safer rides, more rides. The hospice ride in my area is one of the largest. We probably have between 400 and 500 machines. And I tell you, motorists get a little impatient sometimes. So that's what we're trying to make sure that we keep everybody safe, and that's what it's all about. So thank you for your help and consideration.
You're welcome to the attention. With that, Representative Morrow renews his motion that this bill be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. You're on your way to public safety,
thank you
and
very much.
You heard our comments. Thank you for your attention to them. Members, we also have Representative Leidiger here. He's got some folks from out of town. Let's move Representative Leidiger here, and we'll take up, if we need to, my contingent bill on Monday, contingent funding bill. Representative Leidiger, you can move your own house file, and we're going to send this over to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections, where Representative Nelson and I will get another whack at it. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move House File 518 and recommend approval and move to Government State Ops. I do have two out-of-town guests that'll be testifying, but let me go ahead and...
Please, Representative Leidiger, go ahead. And
are
your testifiers here?
Bill.
Are your testifiers here?
Yes.
Okay.
They are.
Go ahead. Oh, you have an author. Representative Leidiger, you also have an author's amendment apparently here. And members, a fiscal note is being passed out as we speak as well.
The fiscal note just came out this morning.
Do you need to move your A1 amendment to get the bill in the condition you'd like to describe it to us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right, move your A1 amendment.
So I move the A1 amendment to House File 518.
Okay, members, we have the A1 All right, just a moment here. I'm getting many things whispered in my ears. What do we have? Okay. I'm lying to you. It's actually the DE-4 amendment. It's not the A-1 amendment. It's a DE-4. This is a substantial amendment. Before we vote on it, do you want to give us a brief description on what's different in the DE amendment that wasn't in your original House file?
Well, the original House file talked about complete streets. We did a delete all.
Oh,
it's all new language.
I got it right here.
The entire bill is about the county transportation streamlining.
Okay.
And it's an initiative really put forward by the Minnesota County Engineers Association and the Association of the Minnesota Counties. It has three provisions in it that would expedite transportation project completion. The first provision creates a centralized provision for MnDOT rulemaking authority governing county and municipal state aid programs. It exempts all rulemaking related to local road state aid from the typical rulemaking process following a statutory exemption procedure. See, MnDOT state aid has an exhaustive internal rulemaking process that considers broad stakeholder input, so it does that already. And then after this process, roughly 6 months, the proposal then begins the statutory rulemaking process that can take over a year to complete. The statutory rulemaking process is duplicative and prevents new standards from being implemented in a timely fashion. So this bill would change that, essentially get rid of the duplication and shorten the amount of time to really get a project approved. That's the first provision. The second is it removes sunset of overweight fees from timber haulers and raw agricultural product haulers dedicated to local bridge inspection and weight limit postings. What happened was the fees that come in were changed to go into the trunk highway fund. We want those to go back into the special fund that is dedicated to bridge inspections for those purposes. The third provision of this bill requires the state wetland permitting agencies to confer with local road authorities to identify opportunities to streamline the wetland permitting process, including considering of a single point of issuance system for state water permits as they relate to transportation projects. The state wetland agencies and conferring local government would be required to report findings back to this body in November. So that's a brief outline of the three provisions, and I'd like to...
Before you go yes. to the commissioner, members, we have the DE4 amendments, and we asked the author to briefly explain the DE4 amendment in front of us. Any questions to that before we vote? Let's do that and put the bill in the shape the author would like for consideration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The bill is amended with the DE4 amendment. Representative Leidiger, you have people to speak to the bill?
Yes, I do. I'd like to introduce County Commissioner from Carver County, and he's also president of the Minnesota County Association, Randy Mulchick. Okay.
Mr. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an honor to be here. And we've worked many times before, and I appreciate all the cooperation and collaboration we've had over the years. Chair Beard and members, my name is Randy Maluchnik. I'm the president of the Association of Minnesota Counties and a Carver County Commissioner. This piece of streamlining legislation is important to counties so that we can improve transportation project delivery and continue to provide safe roads and travel for our citizens and, of course, for commerce. We've relied on our expertise from our county engineers and a partnership with the MDOT State Aid Office to identify these three strategic areas that this legislation will address. First, it will allow for new engineering standards to be implemented in a timely fashion with adequate input. Second, it will provide for funds that will be dedicated for proper bridge signage and inspection for certain overweight loads. And third, it will add an ability for us to work with state agencies to find the most efficient ways to make sure that proper permits are acquired for transportation projects. Mr. Chairman, my remarks are short, so I'd just like to say that AMC very much would like to thank Representative Leidiger for hearing and helping us advocate for the safe, efficient, and timely delivery of local transportation projects. And we'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for your time and consideration of this legislation. So
thank you. Commissioner Maluchnik. Any questions for the commissioner? I do have Mr. Goodman. I think you'd like to testify about the bill, wouldn't you? And Rick Jonas, Rick, are you here? Mr. Jonas?
Yes.
There you are. Okay, thanks. You'd like to speak to it eventually also, wouldn't you? Stand for questions anyhow?
Yes.
Good deal. Mr. Goodman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Leidiger, for this opportunity. It's kind of tough to fall behind the president of the Association of Minnesota Counties, but I'll do my best. Streamlining. The Association of Minnesota Counties have embarked on a vision to reinvent government. Our organization has asked the legislature to break down the walls of the old command and control top-down government. While change can be painful, counties have assumed that role, the role of change agents. And part of this effort is partnering with other local units of government and the state for improved efficiencies in service delivery. Years ago, the counties worked with the legislature to create the state's Swamp Buster Act. This innovative law streamlined the wetland mitigation process for local projects. The wetland bank was created rather than hundreds of individual local banks for the various counties and municipalities. At this time, the counties asked for similar streamlining in the state process for water permitting. Similar to the lead-in to the Swamp Buster legislation, we asked for the opportunity to sit down with the folks that do the regulations around the state so that we can meet and confer in regards to streamlining the permitting process. I've got a list of all the different agencies that we have to work with here, and there are quite a number. And I guess our point is that we would, as county engineers, the Association of Minnesota Counties, want to be able to sit down with folks and see if there's a way to improve this process. We'll call it streamlining. So I guess our effort there is to try to secure that one point source of permitting, but preparatory to that, sit down with the agencies and see what we can do to make the process work better. As we're on our way over here, I kind of commented to Representative Leidinger that what we don't want to do is have another Stillwater Bridge, with all the permitting that goes with that, but rather for the counties and townships, city government. When you look at our projects where we're generally replacing a culvert installation with another culvert, similar size, similar shape, same location, same road, and we just wonder why that process can't be streamlined. We're thinking that 95% of the projects that we've got out there are very simple projects that, and we don't want to say we want to rubber stamp anything, but through a simple meet and confer process, we can get a permit within a timely amount, in a timely fashion. We would like to submit to this group that the counties are change agents, that they work hard to provide for efficiencies. I think we heard about Ted earlier in regards to projects that affect local business. Some of those projects are working through local units of government so that we can deliver better infrastructure to serve business and industry and get this state going, move it ahead. And we just ask that the three elements that Representative Leidinger has got pinpointed in his legislation, number one, to expedite the rulemaking process. We are very close partners with the Office of State Aid, MnDOT, and we do have a standards committee which works with them in that rulemaking process. Special permitting, we've got an awful lot of bridges out there in the hinterlands. I think Goodhue County has got hundreds of township bridges that they have to assist the township with, hundreds of township bridges that are problematic, and in keeping that money flowing to bridge rating, we allow our local units of government to be assured that we have a safe system out there to move those permitted heavy trucks, and finally just to look at the streamlining, and I think everybody wants to move ahead be better partners, and we just ask that we have the opportunity to be better partners with the state agencies that govern the jobs that we do.
Mr. Goodman.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. A question that occurs is you talked about shortening the time frame on the permits. About where you are you now on just replacement bridges, which is almost exclusively what you work with, as to where you think the this bill could go should it pass?
It might be a matter of weeks. It might be a matter of months. What we've seen is over the years, many counties submitted for a permit in 1 year and they anticipated getting the permit in that given year. Now it's, stretching out into the next year. And, hopefully, through this effort, we won't see it go into the following year. Mm-hmm. So, I guess the reasonable time frame is fine with us. But, when you have to work over a permit for, multi-seasons, multi-years, it just, gets to be a real struggle. You are the folks that give us the money for special bonding to replace some of these bridges, mm-hmm. and I know that you want to see the money get spent in a timely fashion, and as I say, most of these projects are, we're replacing a culvert with a culvert or a similar-sized bridge with a similar-sized bridge, it shouldn't be that difficult, but for whatever reason, the process does seem to drag on.
Questions for the testifier members? Questions for the author of the bill? Representative Hausman.
Are we going to hear from the department on that?
If you have specific questions. Well, I didn't see that he was rushing to the podium, but I certainly will give him an audience.
And I don't know if we're talking about geo-bonding for local bridges, because I thought that money gets spent pretty fast. It's hard for me to imagine that I was just looking back there. for those to go, you know, one season to the next. Because so that surprised me a little bit, because we track that pretty closely.
I'm trying to imagine who could tell us specifically of the bonding we've done over the last, well, two bonding cycles anyhow, how much has been committed, how much has actually been spent. Could you tell us about that, Mr. Jonas? Maybe you should just come down here and say hi. Come on down. Mr. Goodman, thank you for your testimony. If you'd stay close by, there might be another question for you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rick Jonas. I'm Deputy State Aid Engineer for MnDOT.
The question is, of the bonding we've done for local bridges, particularly that, I think, would get caught up in, this bill would apply to that process, maybe shorten that, but of the bonds we've let, how many are still outstanding, or how long does it take us to actually put that money in the ground after we've authorized it?
Last summer's bonding, approximately half of what we received last year has been spent. We got the money a little bit later in the year last year than normal, and we have selected the projects, and it's a reimbursement program, so right away in the spring we've got projects identified, and the money we have on hand from last year's GO bonding for bridges is committed.
Replacement program. So the counties actually front the money and then apply and are reimbursed as they do their work.
That's correct. Permitting is a big part of the bridge replacement program, that's no doubt, but it also is a factor in the road projects, even for any widening activities for turn lanes, and the counties find themselves in a permitting situation with multiple agencies sometimes having different regulations, and this is what the counties are looking for, a meet and confer opportunity.
Representative Hausman, I'm going to change the subject. Before I do, though, does that kind of get at your point? Mr. Goodman or Representative Leidiger, the bill that you're carrying here, 518 as amended, that's not just for bridges and culverts, to be clear. That's for all the county road programs, correct? The permitting
That's correct.
All transportation projects.
And thank you, Mr. Jonas, for pointing that out. That is something that I've heard and am fond of expediting a bit if we can.
If I could clarify just a little bit, there's the three provisions of this bill, and that first one has to do with the rulemaking and changes. The second really was when we were talking about the inspection of the bridges, so I don't want to get those two confused. And then the third really was telling the MnDOT and the water permitting agencies to confer and come back with a way where we can have a single point of contact, we meaning the counties and municipals, can have a single point of contact to go in for these transportation projects, as opposed to the counties having to do all this themselves. It's the way it should be done. And it will save, and in terms of dollars, in terms of real time savings and dollar savings, it will occur at the county level. Not necessarily at the state level, but if you look at the fiscal note, we're not talking about additional costs at the county level. And actually, it'll be cost to do the work to come up with the plan. Beyond that, we'll have to see.
Thank you. Further questions for either the testifier or the witness, the author of the bill? Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to talk about the bill? Seeing none, this bill will be going to local government for the rulemaking portion in particular, where Representative Hornstein, Representative Nelson, and myself will be visiting it again. So, further questions, comments? Seeing none, members, Representative Leidiger renews his motion that we send the bill as amended to local government committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. You're on your way to local government committee.
Thank you, members. Appreciate it.
And members, I still have 1971, and I have an amendment for that, thanks to a good discussion last time. We're running a little late, so I think what we're going to do is move that 1971. If you'd save that amendment and that memo for Monday's meeting, we'll deal with that first up. In the meantime, I want to talk about our game plan going forward here, because we're down to like nine meetings, I believe it is. left before we get into past deadlines. And members, somewhere in my pile I had actually a calendar. Did I not bring that down? It went with this. Well, next Monday's the 20th. We know that. We'll be upstairs in room 5. And next Monday we are going to begin talking about... Mark, help me out here. What will we be doing? Oh, we have more individual policy bills for Monday. Wednesday, we've been asked with the bonding chair to hear some of the bonding requests that have come in. We talked a little bit about Representative Scalzi's bill today. And... we will take testimony on those things. We will not be voting on any of these bills next Wednesday. We're going to hear them and lay them over. And what we don't get through, this is what I'm looking for. Thank you so much. How'd Pearson get it? Christina, excuse me. Oh, thank you, Ms. Pearson, for bringing me my note. So we'll be hearing that on Wednesday, the 22nd. And then if we need to, we'll come back in the evening and hear some more of the balance of them. One thing I just did want to point out is that in the committee deadlines that have been given, there really is no deadline on the bonding committee and on those bills. So we're going to tee them up for the 22nd, and if more come in, we don't have to be quite as sensitive on deadlines as we do on policy issues that we may want to consider going forward. So on the 20th, there's more individual policy bills we'll be considering. Mr. Nisley will be publishing those to you and notifying the members of the committees on what ones we're going to hear on the 20th. Next week, we'll be talking about bonding on Wednesday. If you have specific things you really want to bring witnesses in or you want to move forward, please bring those up to the office, too, and we'll talk about putting those on. And then the following week, we'll be back on policy issues on the 27th and the 29th. Okay? Questions? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that roadmap. Just a couple of questions. So is it your intention to hear any kind of road or transit related bonding requests, or would you want individual members to go through a process of requesting a hearing?
Thank you. If you really have an issue you want to hear, yes, please request and come and see me. We have about $5 billion worth of requests on this little sheet. Not all of them have yes, I've got to hear this bill. Some folks just put that in, and I get that, members. We know how that works, that sometimes you put it in to make a point, to do a placeholder. Sometimes the bonding request you have gets pulled up in another bill that's issued elsewhere. So we're not going to hear everything that's out there that we've identified as a bonding request with transportation implications. But if you specifically need to hear something or have something heard, please come and see us, okay?
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then... I know that there have been different processes used by different finance chairs over the years by both parties in terms of how the bonding bill moves through our committee. Do you know yet or have made a determination whether, you know, we'll be ranking them similar to what Representative Holberg did, Chair Holberg did when she was chair? Mm-hmm. You know, we would rank and then you would sort of put it in the blender and see what comes out. That's a sort of a beardism. I like that. Are we going to then mark up very specifically a bill and vote on it that way?
Thank you for the question. It is under consideration. I know Representative Holberg had a method. Representative Leader had a method. At the end of the day, I'd like to, before I call that shot, I'd like to go to the bonding committee chair and say what it is exactly you're looking from us. Because I know we have different kinds of bonds we're going to be dealing with, and then, of course, that amount that we'll be discussing in earnest over on the floor, I'm sure, of how big it's going to be and what, that number is still in flux. But I'll let the chair of the Capital Investment Committee also have a great deal of input on what kind of a number, how much, and then we'll kind of figure out how we'll get there. So,
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
No, you're welcome, Representative. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very quickly, and I know our time is short, but what you said just perked my interest. Mr. Chair, would it be your desire, your inclination that any bonding request dealing with rail would indeed be heard in this committee and wouldn't skirt this committee?
With rails, yes, absolutely. We'll pull all the transit-related ones into the committee. Thanks for the question. Further questions, comments, giving you enough to think about over the weekend here as we move forward. Well, thank you for your attention to these matters today, members. With that, we are adjourned.